Welcome to SLA, where you can learn to avoid gaslighting yourself and your language teaching practices,
break down academic gatekeeping on second language acquisition,
and girl boss your way through dynamic, engaging, and research-based language teaching.
I'm Ben Fisher Rodriguez, and my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Bill Langley, and my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Brian Smith, and my pronouns are he, they.
Let's slay.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of SLA, Second Language Acquisition for Everyone. We got Brian back this week. Yay!
Yay!
We miss you.
And yeah, miss Brian so much. And we're really glad to have you back. And this week, we are going to change things up a little bit. We are going to start with gatekeep and unlock a new definition, maybe, for you. So in one of my classes recently, I had to incorporate a new assessment strategy into a lesson plan, and I stumbled upon this term dynamic assessment, which once I give you the definition of it, I think you'll see that this is something that we kind of already do quite a bit, but now you have a name for it. So the definition comes from a 2012 article from Ani and Abadi in Dynamic Assessment of L2 Learner Sociocognitive Development via Web 2.0. I'm not going to go into the article, but it had a good definition of what dynamic assessment is. So wanted to use this definition here and then just kind of want to talk about how we see this in the classroom, how we've done things similar to dynamic assessment, if not exactly like dynamic assessment, how those things have gone well, and how we girl boss. So to start off, here's the definition. And mind you, this is from 2012. So when they say new, not that new. Dynamic assessment is a new approach to assessment, which is based on dynamic interaction between the examiner and the examinee, in which the examiner mediates the examinee with support in the form of leading questions and prompts. It is the examinee's responsiveness to mediation that provides an indication of their likely future development. Lung, 2007. Sternberg and Go, 2002, point out that a central tenet of dynamic assessment approach is that it considers abilities to be malleable and flexible rather than fixed. The qualitatively oriented dynamic assessment addresses learners' problems in a highly flexible way through individualized mediation. So past all of the academic jargony stuff, what do we take from that?
We were talking a little bit pre-recording about how this reminds us of the ACTful OPI and the format that takes, where the examiner is listening to the responses that are given at the beginning of the exam in order to formulate questions at the right level, at the right content, geared to elicit certain samples of language from the examinee. And this is really to kind of put them so they can put their best foot forward, but also responsive to, you know, if they answer a question at a certain level, that then the examiner can push to the next level and ask a question that would elicit a more advanced sample of language or a superior sample of language, etc. And this also just mirrors kind of what we do. I think what we do when we do whole class language teaching and whole class conversation is that we are trying to be responsive to the students in front of us, and that we have a lot of tools at our disposal to make language comprehensible, but also to support interaction and to give us material for further conversation as well.
And it's one of those things that really just seems like, well, this is just good teaching, because you know, if you ask a question and students are not able to answer it, and then you just move on to another question that's at the same level, I mean, you're not really using the information that you got from the first question to advance the student's learning, which is the whole point of assessment. So it's kind of like, to me, like, if you are not doing dynamic assessment, I wonder what really you're doing with your formative assessments in terms of like questioning in class and things like that. It's easier, I think, in a lot of ways to envision it in terms of formative assessments and informal assessments rather than, something done at the end of a unit or that needs to be, recorded in a grade book or something like that, which I suppose there must be some way to do that, given, we have a formalized assessment such as the OPI that employs that methodology. But I would say probably most teachers aren't. If you are, let us know. I know that I'm not. But yeah, it's just another way to think about, like, yeah, how are we using the information that we're gaining from our assessments and to the best benefit of our students?
It reminds me also of the, and this is a hold on, maybe see if I can find it really quickly. Maybe I can just paraphrase. I'm gonna paraphrase the definition of formative assessment that I got from Dylan William, which is just activities that we undertake in the class that provide us evidence that will help us make a better informed decision of what to do next. So we want, either we are confirmed that we're on the right course and we can continue on with the learning, with the conversation, or that we receive information that our students are not ready for where we are trying to push for right now and need to backpedal, reteach, make some connections more explicit, do some further activities to deepen the learning before pushing the students to that next spot. But it, so anything that gives us that information to make a better informed decision. And it sounds like based on the definition that you read to us, Billiam, that dynamic assessment is responsive in this way, but perhaps in a more live, active setting, question mark?
Yeah, I definitely think yeah, it's responsive as well, and like that came to mind with when you're talking about OPI as well. So like I've mentioned before, I've done stamp at school, and the reading and listening portions of those proficiency tests are responsive in that. As you continue to get questions correct at a certain reading level or a certain listening level, you keep getting questions. If you're answering, and I don't know like the how the test actually works on the back end or anything, but say you get like five questions at novice low and you answer all of them correct, then they're going to start asking you novice mid questions. But if out of five, maybe you miss one, they'll still push you up to the next level until you no longer are answering consistently at a certain level. And that's kind of how I'm thinking about this as well. In this assignment that I made, I actually put it into a rubric, which I don't think I would suggest. It was just like for the purposes of that assignment that I did, I needed to have like how I was going to, or how I or the students were going to evaluate their work or their completion of a task. So I started thinking about it, like, what would this add if it were on a rubric somewhere? Like, but I don't think I would ever, ever, ever put a numerical grade on it. Like, if on one end of this spectrum of dynamic assessment, students can do things completely independently, and on the other end, or like towards the center, is something like student, like teacher gave prompt to remind student of a word, or teacher like circumlocuted to help the student understand something like that.
Out of the
Like
TPR
that
gesture,
wouldn't
maybe.
use a TPR gesture. I know that I often start to just like say the letter, like the first letter of the word, like because I'm like, oh, I know you know this. I know that you've processed this a lot, this word a lot. I know that you know how to say this. And so I'll just start with like the first sound of the word, and a lot of times, not all the time, but students will get the rest of it. Like, yeah, see, like told you it was in there. Like you just needed to pull it out that little bit. So they weren't able to do that yet completely on their own, like complete the sentence that they were trying to write or say whatever they were trying to say. But they weren't able to do it completely independently. But they had all of the stuff in their head already. So really, I was just kind of eliciting what they already know rather than let them just like ask straight out, like, I don't know how to say this word and I don't think I know it and I give up. I think it could be like a self-assessment as well, maybe. Like, which I think we've seen those before. Like, I can do this on my own. I can do this with some help. like we've seen those kind of self-assessments before, but this is kind of putting it on teacher observation rather of student progression rather than putting it on students. You know, we're our own worst critics, right? So like, I might think I can't do something yet, but the teacher might be confident that I know how to do it. So like, how are they determining the level of support they think I need? Are they just going to give it to me? Or do I actually already know the thing? I just need a little bit of help. So, students are always harder on themselves on self-assessments than I am, because I see what they do. They just see what more they could do.
I find that students, my students, because for some reason, even though I tell them this is not where your grade is coming from, they still think that somehow that is where their grade is coming from. So they give themselves top marks on every category, even if it literally says, like, you know, very simple language, like you need to provide evidence of XYZ.
And show me the receipts.
Can't do it. And so, yeah, which I have that problem sometimes. Yeah,
they're learning. They're just youngins. Mm-hmm. Still learning that confidence.
And it just makes me think, too, like, we just did our state testing, and I think the state tests are now responsive. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if dynamic is the right word for it, but, like, you know, based on how many questions you get correct or what kinds of questions you answer correctly, they ask you more difficult questions. And actually, back in the day when I designed our placement test for world language, which is Google Form with reading and listening mm-hmm. questions, it's kind of like that, you know, it's like, the more you can do, the more questions you get served, and then the higher level that places you. So I kind of think in terms of like formal assessment, it makes sense for more proficiency assessment rather than performance, because it's like, well, I mean, the point of a proficiency assessment is to see what you're able to do independently right. of curriculum and whatever. So it's like, that's an important measure for that kind of thing.
And you just saying that kind of reminded me, kind of pointed out to me, like, that's kind of where the proficiency performance distinction is kind of lying, like how familiar are you with the topic? Because it's something that we've been doing in class, performance, versus either can you still do this when from back whenever you learned it, or can you adapt and use what you already know in a new situation? So, have to think about that more.
Yeah.
I don't know where else I was going next. Oh, So I do have a request from the community. If anyone uses Canvas and has played around with mastery paths at all, I think it could be something where, like, or at least this idea of dynamic assessment got me thinking about mastery paths, because I think my understanding is you set up these different assignments, and when students achieve whatever this other assignment gets unlocked, because that's where they should go next. But if they score less, then it goes back to like a remediation. And I've liked the idea of it, but it seemed like so much work to like try to set that up, because I hate having to make the assignments all the time on the internet's computer webs things. I'm just like, hey, this is what we're doing. And then I the assignment and put points on it, but I don't build the stuff on the assignment, or like, because we're doing everything else on paper, you would just have to have everything already printed.
Yeah, I mean, it actually sounds like something that I did before, again, back in the day when I used Classcraft, which unfortunately no longer exists in the form that it used to.
I've heard about that in a while.
It started out as in the vein of like Class Dojo, of like a classroom management PBIS kind of system where you're able to award points for good behavior or whatever, but then they like tied it into like assignments. And so basically they had this feature called quests. And so the whole thing about Classcraft is like, it's kind of like a fantasy setting, like, oh, you're on an adventure of learning and you got your team, which is your classmates, you know, the table group that you're with. And like one of you has these, whatever. And so it's like the quests were like kind of playing into the storytelling aspect of that, but like kind of, I'm not sure how to put this, but like making the assignments seem like an adventure. So it's like, in order to, you know, progress in the story, you need to
conjugate all these verbs
or whatever the assignment is. And so like a feature of it was that if like as the feature of the like marker of the quest or like the point, checkpoint, whatever, it's like if they pass it, then they can move on to this objective, or if they don't, they can be forced back to do a remedial kind of assessment or whatever. And so I have used it for things that were on paper and also things that were fully online. And it was really great, actually. And I kind of, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, man, that was fun. And I wish they still had that, but it doesn't exist anymore. But it also was a lot of work, I'm not gonna lie. So.
That's what I'm thinking. And like we, a little bit pre-recording, we're talking about systems to kind of keep track of what sorts of supports are we giving to students in their language use. And we want to be aware of those things so that we can gradually take apart those scaffolds and, watch our students flourish more independently. But that, like, kind of like Brian said, class craft. Sounds like that you could make a whole world out of that. You could make a whole, class moment out of that. And I can imagine the time investment it took to get set up and then to maintain and then to revisit with every class and kind of learn the language associated with it. And I was telling Bill and Brian before we recorded that I have used Anne-Marie Chase's system of magic cards before, which is not Magic the Gathering. However, it is also magical. Basically, she keeps an index card for each student in her class with their name on it, and she uses it as a way of randomization for calling on students, so that to try to, in the vein of equity sticks or whatever, title you've given them wherever you are. So pulling kids at random, so you're not always calling on the same kids. It also helps with cold calling if you are doing that. And then she records the quality of the student's response directly onto the card so that she has essentially a marker of their performance in class relative to what has been going on in class, so the learning material. So you could do this different ways. You could mark down, like, oh, a plus is for if they answer in more than one sentence, and like a check is if they answer in a sentence, a minus is if they answer in just like a word or a phrase, or you could put a little zero if they are unable to respond, or an X if they were just not paying attention and you had to repeat the question, just as a way to amass lots of data on the students and the quality of their responses. While also, I mean, it serves the randomization goal as well. And I had been doing that in previous years successfully in that it was useful to me. And I don't know that I was always using it as much as I would want to, as consistently as I would want to. This year, I switched to using ClassDojo because I have a little iPad that I take my attendance on that I can also use ClassDojo on to assign points kind of in a similar way and do randomization in the same way and, build groups really quickly. And it has its all those little tools essentially built in. And I was like, haha, technology. But I'm finding that I'm doing less of the magic card sort of assessment, and I have kind of less of a written down on paper version of the quality of unsupported student responses because I have been hesitant to use my iPad just because I find that I want to look at my students more rather than looking at the iPad. It's like, it's so real that we live in a world where, like, if a screen is present, like, your eyes are going to go to the screen, and I don't want to fall down like the toilet of just being on the iPad the whole time. My students already like make fun of me and they call me a sticky iPad baby, like a baby that's like given a sticky iPad to like be diverted in its attention so that way it doesn't ruin family dinner or whatever. And so they just call me sticky iPad baby, just as an aside. Enough about me. But I already am aware that like our students have problems with devices themselves, and my school has implemented a cell phone policy that makes it so that cell phone use during class time is like completely prohibited to the point of taking phones away via campus supervisor and like all sorts of stuff. So like we're being fairly hardcore with them about screen time and about being conscious about it. And I think as a millennial adult, am trying to be conscious of my own screen time as well. So all that to say is that I have this useful tool, like I essentially moved the paper thing digital, and then I'm just not using it anymore because I don't want to, because I want to be looking at my students and make a decision in the moment who I want to ask the questions to. So I'm reflecting that I enjoyed that system for the randomization aspect and for the lots of semi-quantitative qualitative data that I was taking on student responses. I kind of had, like, oh, this student is pretty consistently responding with just words in class. I wonder if there's a way to push them. Or these, most of my students are responding in sentences. How can I get them to elaborate a little bit more? I miss that aspect of it. And so I'm reflecting now that, like, in order to be perhaps more dynamic in my assessment, I need to have a quick at a glance, like, of where the students are in these, like, spontaneous conversations that I can then use as kind of the springboard for what comes next.
Yeah, and for me, I think I mentioned this before, like one of our values at school is intellectual engagement. And like, if I don't know, I'm starting to be at with like grad school stuff, I'm becoming more and more data minded, I suppose. And I want to have like, if I'm going to make a claim that they're not engaging intellectually, like here you are. Like, so I don't know, feeling like I have to support every single thing, every single decision. I'm going to cut this out. That was a personal thing, but I think it would be nice to have, at least at a glance, like, not that it's up their grade, but like, are they doing what they need to get the most out of class? Like, and you know, participation looks different for different people, and I'm not necessarily talking about participation. I'm talking about like, are they jotting things down when they've got ideas, even if they don't want to speak them out? Are they trying to, when I ask, like, to do like a little turn and talk, am I hearing them speak like off topic in English, which is also a behavior thing, but like, are you taking advantage of every opportunity to succeed? So that was just an aside. But like, when they are off topic, they're not taking advantage of opportunities to practice revisiting the language that we've already used in class, and that's going to have an impact on performance later.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of hearing like using a system to track student behaviors in class, I guess, so that you can intervene in terms of like, are they on task or are they, taking advantage of the opportunities you give them to practice? But I guess, kind of in my mind, I was seeing dynamic assessment as more of like, how much help do they need?
I lost the plot in there. I went off on a tangent.
That's okay. It happens to all of us, probably.
But yeah, so it is like about the mediation that they need.
I've been thinking about while you're talking too about that assessment. I don't know. Maybe sometimes I think of it as like, and maybe a lot of us fall into the trap of thinking it as something that produces a grade, essentially, that like, we produce an evaluation, a score, a something. But I think that it also, in order for it to be most effective for the student in moving their learning forward, also needs to be in conversation with them. And so, talking about Bill's thoughts of, are the students using their time best for learning? Are they applying themselves as much as we hope that they can? I think that any assessment that we do should also maybe be partnered with, a reflective assessment by the student of themselves, and then try to square those things next to each other. Communicate to the student somehow efficiently, this is what I saw, while the student is saying, this is what I saw myself do, and trying to meet in the middle so that way we can talk about, like, hey, yeah, you are, I notice you're switching to English in moments that I would want you to stick in German. Can you, next time, if you are uncertain what to say, can you, I don't know, raise your hand or something, or, provide some sort of out, or, rely on your bank of useful phrases, or ask a, unrelated question just to keep the conversation going, something like that. Because again, like we don't want it to be something that we just do to students. We also want them to build the self-awareness and the self-efficacy to, in those moments, kind of evaluate, like, I'm feeling lost, I'm feeling stuck, and so what can I do? And if they, some students just have that bank of strategies and either just go, oh, well, the teacher clearly doesn't want me chatting in English, so I'm just not going to talk. And then other students are like, oh, I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to tell my partner I don't know what to do. And then whatever happens after that is between, us and God, I guess. And so, then things get wild and crazy. So, yeah, I think that any assessment activity that we do as the teachers, if we're assessing in the interpretive mode, if we're assessing in the interpersonal mode, et cetera, need to be paired with some sort of student reflection. And if you're struggling with how to find a structure for that sort of thing, as I was going to say was, but maybe certainly always am, is like, how do I provide that structure myself? If you want to make it easy on yourself, there's a fantastic book called The Roadmap to Reflection by Kimberly Clelett Davis and Tiffany Dalton Lopez that has reflections specific to world language teaching that just sentence frames or, multiple choice things that the students can fill out as a way to reflect. And they tie in to the different skills of reading and listening and speaking and writing, but they can also tie into kind of bigger conversations that we would want to have with our students. Goal setting, future, like future orientation, self-efficacy, self-confidence, pride, things that we want students to build in their learning as like language learners. But again, we have to open those conversations through the assessment, like this is what you can do, which helps hopefully build their identity as a language learner and language user, but then also starting to get them think about where they're going next and, you know, take a moment to bask in the goodness of what they did, but, you know, build that footpath kind of to the next step.
I think we might have someone who's real good at making sure students have reflections on their learning here. Brian.
Is that
Yeah,
me?
see ya.
Well, I was gonna say, like, if you go back to the Latin root of the word assessment, it comes from accedere, and Latin teachers don't drag me. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, but it means to sit beside. So as a teacher giving an assessment, it's not really about generating a number. It's about, you know, sitting beside and guiding the student to learn from the experience, actually. And so on that note of reflection, I actually use a lot of materials from the roadmap to reflection. I have students write a reflective essay on their language acquisition experience throughout the semester, at the end of each semester. So they have to, you know, look back at their prior assessments and other work they've done in class and follow, you know, answer those reflection questions that are not only about their growth in the language itself, but also like their perseverance and pride and all those fun things that you mentioned. And the first time I did that, I was so struck by the like quality, or I guess the value of what students were being made to write about and think about, that I made it like 10% of my students' grades. So 90% comes from actual language performance, and 10% is the reflection that they do, and other things that they do throughout the semester, like keeping a journal and things like that, that I can get into it in maybe a different episode. But yeah, I thought it was that important that it needed to be like, that's actually what they do for their final in my class, because they do IPAs, integrated performance assessments, to generate that 90%. But like by the end of the semester, it's like, I'm tired, they're tired, like we need something else to do, so that's what they do during the final period. And it's, again, so valuable that I've kept it, and we do it every year, and students are really used to like going through that process, and that they start thinking about like, oh yeah, I should keep this because I want to write about it later. And you know, it's been really, really helpful, I think, because oftentimes, like as teachers who teach for proficiency, and you know, we in language acquisition, we might find that students are not always metacognitively aware of the progress that they're making in our classes. And by asking them to reflect on these kinds of questions and formalize it, you know, by turning something in to the teacher, that's a way of kind of having them notice it. Like, oh yeah, I have actually made a lot of progress, and you know, here's the proof.
Love that. It's great.
And if people are listening to this being like, spill the beans, like what sort of questions are you asking? I think even something as simple as providing like a three question, I have like these quarter sheets that I can print on demand and just cut them up into four and then pass them out to kids, and that they can answer the questions, is like something I enjoyed about reading, writing, speaking, listening today. I've noticed improvement in my reading, writing, speaking, listening today because what? And I wonder if in the future I can, whatever it is. Even just that, it kind of helps build the pride in what they've done today, the kind of like awareness of improvement as well. Again, like sometimes our classes can feel like just talking, which because it's the means and the end of language acquisition, like we are so fine with. But as students who are, you know, put in a school system that emphasizes products and end grades and things like that, it can feel disorienting and kind of, you know, pointless even. You know, we can give them that inner sense of momentum that helps hopefully make them, you know, lifelong language learners, and kind of gives them the sense that like every little bit that you do counts for something. It counts for your acquisition, it counts for your future ability to use the language. And so even those three questions, you can apply them to kind of any mode you like. And that can do a lot to build that internal momentum and start that conversation with you as the instructor about, yeah, I have noticed that you're using more full sentences in class. I have noticed that you're doing better to tune out distractions. I have noticed that, you know, those sorts of things can be good moments of affirmation and confirmation between the teacher and the learner.
And I think that's kind of like another thing that I was thinking about with dynamic assessment is that it's ongoing, like nonstop. It doesn't have to be. Like it can, like in the context, in the definition, it was about like on an assessment. But like if we're always informally assessing our students, you know, whether it's with like Anne Marie Chase's index card, magic cards, or if it's on a clipboard that you keep. I think one of my like big takeaways is like, for me, I think it would be beneficial to have some sort of running tab of like, this is where students are, like you said, like have little symbols like plus because they answered in a full sentence or whatever, just like that gives me something to look at and be even more specific with my feedback when it comes time to feedback on an assessment or something. Like if I say, hey, I noticed that in your speaking assessment, you did this, this, and this. I'm noticing in class, this, this, and this. So let's try to like build that part, build up the not formal assessment interactions to see if that'll help out on the to see if that'll help out on the formal assessment. Like some comments that I've given before include things like, hey, like I see you talk, for example, wanted to talk about what time someone woke up and whatever it is. And we talk about this all the times on like during weekend chat. Like, what time did you wake up this morning? Oh, he woke up at this time. They woke up at this time. So that is a place where you could like really lean into like pick up that phrase, that vocabulary. So just like here, which I guess that's more on me too, but like because I lead that discussion. But also just these are the things I'm no, like these are the things that maybe you could pay more attention to, but that yeah, I'm getting back to just like regular assessment or regular like ideas of assessment. Like this is what you did, this is what you can do to improve. So I don't know. Now I've circled back on myself, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are all good things to think about.
Just helps me be more
And
reflective, I
I
guess.
guess, yeah, like really what I would say to those listening, like if you're wondering like what to take away from this, just like think about like what are you using your interactions and assessments of students for? Like, are you doing anything with that? And, you know, can you think of ways that you can use the information you're gaining to push students further? And I again, like, I feel that this is something that like good teachers just intuitively do, but like it does help to be able to describe, you know, those things that, you know, what good teaching looks like.
And to
So
just be
yeah, I
conscious of the reflection that we're doing, because I think if, like you said, like we do this all the time. Like that's why this topic was interesting to me, because I'm like, oh, this is something that I do, and I have like some words to describe it now. And now that I can like talk about like the whole process, I can leverage it better because I'm understanding what's going on in real time, and I can be like, oh, yep, like that's a piece, that's some data to inform my teaching now. And then one more thing that I wanted to kind of like, I don't know, toss around is the idea of dynamic assessment being qualitative rather than quantitative. So it's about like observation, not just like a number of like number correct on a test or something, which I think, you know, our use of proficiency rubrics or proficiency inspired rubrics kind of already does. Like we are forced to put qualitative information on, you know, because like language doesn't have just right and wrong answers unless it is like just a fill in the blank or a vocab quiz or something like that. There's no right or wrong answers. And I mean, I see that being a struggle for students as well. Like someone who they might perceive as doing worse in class because when they speak up, they make mistakes. When it comes time to perform, it's not about how often you are right. It's not about how often you have spoken, quote unquote, correctly. There are a bunch of other things that go into play with it. So, like, if you got a huge amount of vocabulary and you're like using really descriptive language, but you've got some subject verb agreement issues, and I see a perfectly written sentence, but it doesn't have very like, I don't know, specific vocabulary to what we're talking about or whatever, like, you know, those, not to say they even out, but like, there's so many things that go into assessing language more than just right and wrong, and being able to show that is really hard, and it's hard for students to understand. I mean, like, I know you did a great job with you did your whole study on getting students to understand your, so like, we know it's possible. I just need to go re-listen.
And I think like I actually do bake in reflections to all of my assessments as well. Like after, like all my students know, like after they do a writing, after they do speaking, they have to do a reflection. It's like part of it. And so I find that like really that's where the sweet spot is for pushing them because, you know, like for example, like I have like a self-assessment rubric that they can use and like a sheet that like describes different levels of performance just broadly in whatever mode we're focusing on. And students can look at that and kind of identify where they currently are and like see just clearly like what the next steps are for them. And like again, they have to justify where they're at. And so making them think about that over and over again, I find has been a lot more helpful than just like handing back a number and like they look at it and throw it in the trash.
Ben, you got any final thoughts?
No, but I think, I don't know, it this conversation just reminds me to build in that sort of metacognitive awareness of how language acquisition works, again, because it is so unusual compared to a subject matter. And that can be just through these little reflections that we throw at students on the regular to keep them accountable also to themselves and to, you know, to help reinforce the habits of language learning that we know they need. They need to be paying attention. They need to be responding to questions. They need to be looking at the things that we're doing to support visually. And hopefully that these, you know, can increase this sort of self-regulatory behavior and kind of the awareness that, yeah, I don't know, sometimes kids just need to know that they're doing it, right? Like, yes, you are increasing your language skill today because we had a conversation about this, and that will help increase your language skill. So this has kind of been just, you know, another reminder for me to stay looking at my students, you know, not at the iPad, and ask them questions afterwards about how it went and what their experience was so that we can keep growing together.
So something I've been kind of toying with, you just made me think of it, like rather than necessarily including like, you know, some kind of quantitative measure of like how much mediation a student needed to perform a task, I've thought about the idea of somehow including like just the how much a student has grown in terms of like paying attention to their own reflections that they're making from one unit to the next. Like, have they like, okay, they made the observation, have they applied it? You know, have they done something to improve? Because, like, every student has room to improve. And, you know, you might have had the experience of having a heritage speaker or someone who's, you know, gone to immersion school, or, you know, has some kind of advanced level over everyone else in your room. And they may meet all of your targets for the course quite easily, but that doesn't mean they don't have room to grow. And so I've been thinking of, like, could there be a way to incorporate that somehow into a grade? You know, it's like I have my standards, I know what they want, what I want them to do, and they know what they need to do. Could there be a small part that's like, have you grown? You know, like I don't know. It's kind of interesting to think about, and I haven't quite figured out how to do it, but.
It's a tough one. Well, next week or next episode will be our 20th episode, and after that we're gonna go on summer break. But for next episode, we're just gonna do some reflection of our own. Talk about how we've gaslit, gatekept, and girl bossed this school year, this past double digits worth of podcast episodes. We would love to hear from you on how you have gaslit, gatekept, and girl bossed this year in your language classroom as well. So you can email that to info@slaypod.com. Bye.